You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, everyone. Kind of a big idea we're going to tackle here at the outset. From two very different angles this morning, we're going to examine whether terrorist groups have something of an advantage here in a nation of democratic institutions. It's an old debate, and I think, Miles, it's fair to say that we've been considering whether American constitutional freedoms are an opening for groups like Al-Qaeda since 9/11 and even before.
Yeah, are we willing to take those lumps to prove we have a system that is something that should be a model for the world?
Well, it's going to be tested. Do American constitutional rights increase the reach of groups like Al-Qaeda in, say, recruiting and in delivering terrorist messages? Two intriguing and very different stories pose the same question this morning. Self-proclaimed 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, as we mentioned at the top of the hour, intends to plead not guilty at his terrorism trial, and that may provide him a podium to espouse Al-Qaeda's views from a New York courtroom. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, federal officials, as we mentioned in the newscast, yesterday unsealed terror-related charges against eight men who were accused of recruiting Somali Americans from Minnesota to join an Islamic extremist group back in Somalia called Al-Shabaab. Officials say it's the largest arrest of American citizens alleged to be connected with an Al-Qaeda affiliate. Abdi Ainte is an editor with Voice of America in Washington, D.C., has long experience covering the Somali community in Minneapolis and in Minnesota. Abdi Ainte, good morning.
Good morning to you, John.
First of all, how disruptive, how upset is the Somali community likely to be about the revelation of these indictments, these arrests, and how long has this been going on?
Well, I don't think the community will be disruptive in that sense. I think this case has been going on, or the investigation has been going on for at least a year or so in Minneapolis, and the community has been aware of it. In fact, the community has been impacted largely by the investigation for a year or so. It has been going on since at least December of 2007, when young men of Somali descent, mostly American citizens who actually grew up in the Twin Cities,
right,
have begun to go back to Somalia to join this group, Al-Shabaab, that is now the main rebel group in Somalia against the internationally supported transitional federal government.
And what did we specifically learn yesterday, and principally how easy was it for the Al-Shabaab recruiters, allegedly, to actually find adherents and sympathizers in the community in the Twin Cities?
Depends on how you look at it. If you think about the number of people that have so far been either recruited or accused of being part of this plot, the number is still very negligible. About 20 or so people are believed to have gone to Somalia or returned, and about a total of 14 people have been accused of either financing or recruiting or actually going to Somalia and joining this group. Yesterday's indictment was against eight people who some of them are not even in the United States. Some of them are actually in Somalia fighting alongside Al-Shabaab already. So, you know, it has been, you can say that it has been somewhat easier for Al-Shabaab to penetrate the Somali community in the Twin Cities and recruit about two dozen people. But on the other hand, when you look at the a very large number of the Somali community, estimated between 40 to 60,000,
sure,
the number is still negligible.
Abdi Ainte helped to report this story for the New York Times as a former reporter with experience looking into the Somali community there in Minnesota. Ram Kubi, criminal defense attorney and civil rights lawyer here in the studio. What is the sense in which cases like this raise the specter that entire communities are going to be targeted by investigators and that some sort of net will be thrown around communities like the Somali community in the Twin Cities? There are Afghan communities in Virginia. There are all sorts of communities all over the United States.
Whenever something like this happens, the local community is concerned that they'll be targeted. But this particular set of arrests and this particular indictment seems very narrowly drawn to basically go after the people who are responding to this Facebook jihad, as it were, as well as to go after the people who are specifically recruiting them to basically participate in a teenage Islamic youth scene, sort of Lord of the Flies with automatic weapons in Somalia.
Well, which is pretty terrifying, and it seems like easy pickings.
Well, it is frightening in Somalia, But remember, the political situation in Somalia is incredibly complex, and it doesn't necessarily translate to terrorism here.
Well, let's turn our attention to the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed revelation that we got over the weekend, that he's going to plead not guilty along with his defendants in criminal court, and that that raises the possibility that the KSM trial will be something of a circus, as we mentioned at the top. The only experience we have with this is the Zacharias Moussaoui trial. Here's Ed McMahon, an attorney in Washington, D.C., who is the court-appointed attorney for Zacharias Moussaoui. And this was his reaction to a comparison between what happened at that trial and what might happen in the KSM trial.
He testified and he said many awful things. He was boasted about the attacks of 9/11. He in many ways laughed at the loss that the people that had testified in the courtroom had suffered. I think, if I remember correctly, he testified why he thought the attacks were justified. And when he was done and the verdict was rendered, he's now spending the rest of his life in a prison.
Now, Edward McMahon seems to suggest that no matter how circus-like the trial gets, it's the verdict that is all that really counts here.
Well, the fascinating thing about this case is there's a tremendous unity of purpose between Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the government. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed isn't trying to beat the rap. The rap is probably unbeatable. He wants the government to execute him. And our government wants to execute him. Now,
by pleading not guilty?
Sure.
He still wants to be executed?
Sure, because it goes like this. He is in a position to represent himself. He won't be a regular defendant who is seen but not heard except when he testifies. If he chooses to represent himself, which he can, then he has tremendous access to every single part of the proceeding. And in every part of the proceeding, he'll be able to articulate in one way or another his views, whatever they happen to be at the time.
Evidence questions complicated the Zacharias Moussaoui case. They're likely to be more complicated in this case. If the prosecutors are not allowed to use torture evidence in the case, then they will have to maybe bring in classified sources and methods that gave them some indication that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was who he said he was.
No, I don't think that's the case. Look, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed indeed confessed after coercive techniques, torture. The government can't use and won't try to use those confessions. But he also made a perfectly fine, admissible confession in open court down at the military tribunal where he announced that he did it. I did it. I want to plead guilty. Kill me. That was basically his position. And that will be admissible against him.
So the circus is actually a help in terms of noting the strength of our constitutional protection. If the trial is a circus-like trial, it doesn't necessarily mean justice can't be done.
Not a bad thing at all, especially since these guys don't look nearly as scary once they're in a courtroom. Moussaoui was terrifying at the time, not so scary anymore.
And it's more than 8 years later. Ron Kuby, criminal defense attorney, civil rights lawyer with experience in terrorism cases here in the studio, and Abdi Ainte, editor with the Voice of America in Washington, D.C., who is lots of experience reporting on the Somali community in Minnesota. Thanks for those two looks at a complex story. Let's check in now at 15 minutes after the hour.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.